It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor. Hello there, Daniel.
Well, hello,
good
Mark.
Good to see you once again as yeah. We're in the deepest, darkest winter here in the Northwest. And getting into a subject this week, kind of touched on actually last week, but you want to expand on why it's so important to build trust in marriage.
And how.
And how.
And I don't mean and how, I mean and how.
There you go.
How to build trust in marriage. It last week. I think that was actually a replay of a previous post or radio show. And so this is going to be a little bit different. And I've entitled this, yeah, Building Trust in Marriage. But I want to get into a little bit more about how and really the role that trust plays. And it's if you've heard my broadcast on the Love Triad, we're going to hit on that a little bit, bring in a little bit of stuff on personality and just bits and pieces. So I realize a lot of times in these radio shows we can't hit anything exhaustively. We just kind of hit the tops of things, and so maybe this show will fill in some of the questions raised in the last show. But so building trust in marriage, it's such an important and central issue in marriage and so in counseling. Not everybody with trust issues comes for counseling, but when people come for counseling, almost invariably, trust turns out to be at least high mention. Mm-hmm. May not be the presenting problem, although it often is, but it's right in there. And so I want to talk a little bit in the beginning about why trust is broken to begin with. It always seems to come as a surprise to couples, at least when they come in and they present trust. It's trust was broken. I feel lied to. Where did this come from? And of course, the reality is that people bring distance and they bring problems into marriage. And then eventually marriage has a way of finding these things out, right? Because that's part of the purpose of marriage, is God's way of, surfacing these things, bringing them up, healing them. But they're there. I mean, we marry these problems, and they're two-sided. It's never just one person bringing all the problems.
Well, a lot of people think you've got to be a totally fixed and a whole person before you get married, because marriage isn't going to fix anything. But you do get married to fix a lot of problems.
Oh, that's right.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you didn't even know you had a lot of problems a lot of times.
Yeah, the scripture is not good for man to live alone. some people have this special gift that they can go without marriage relationship, but we all need intimate relationships. So I think that the reason trust is broken to begin with, or some event takes place, somebody took some money or spent some money and lied about it, or somebody, is using pornography or sometimes I hear people say it was something that happened before we were married, but he or she didn't tell me about it, and now I feel like I've been lied to or misrepresented. It could be financial or lots of different things.
Yeah, find out you've got $300,000 in debt you didn't tell me about.
Yeah, I've heard that before, very close to that. So we could basically say, put in simplistic terms, that it's the root of broken trust is psychological and emotional distance. Some of that distancing in relationships is modeled for us in our family of origin. We've talked about marriage before and explained that psychological and emotional distance is really, we agree to that. Intuitively, we intuit the distance. We're drawn toward the distance. An example would be a person, gal grows up with an alcoholic father, and which is alcohol being a huge factor in psychological and emotional distance. I'm psychologically and emotionally unavailable around that, alcohol being the reason for that. Grows up, refuses to marry an alcoholic, but marries a career military person who's never home, also psychologically and emotionally unavailable. Mm. not to talk badly about career military people, but we all choose vocations that have to do with our safety and security. Yeah. I'm kind of, as I bring up a lot of terms and ideas here that if you've heard some previous shows, they make sense to you. And I don't have time to go into all of them, but if you have questions,
podcasts, you've got a bunch of them.
Family of origin, personality comes into it. And of course, personality is something that begins at birth and sometimes even before birth, where it's a defense mechanism. It has to do with security and safety. And so when we move toward intimate relationships or significant relationships, the question of safety and security comes into place, and that's the core of our personality. So you could say...
Well, I was speaking of safety, we always hear that it's women that are looking for that mostly, but I think men need that too, safety. They need to know this is a safe person.
Yeah, I mean, so we could look at safety and security in some more practical terms. Everyone wants to be valued. Everyone wants to control as much as they can about circumstances that will impact them. And the third one is resources. Everyone wants to feel the sense of adequate resources. And resources can be financial, they can be education, they can be relationships, they can be material things. That's why trust gets broken in the first place, psychological and emotional distance. That is always a result of family of origin, the way I grew up, my personality, which is tied in with the family of origin. And again, you bring up the issue of defining safety and security. We can define those in terms of needing to be valued, needing to have control, needing to have a sense of resources. So building trust means working on three areas that I've mentioned before in the love triad. But the thing I want to stress today is that these things have to be worked on simultaneously, and they are working on trust, of course, working on forgiveness, and working on communion. So we've done a show before on the love triad. I've written an article, ChristianCounselorsForum.com. In the archives, you'll find an article on trust, forgiveness, and communion. So just hitting the top of this, trust, when we're working on trust, a lot of people want to use compliance lists. I'll trust you when you do fulfill this page of things. So that's a different kind of trust. That's not the kind of trust that is going to sustain your marriage. Mm-hmm. So those compliance lists, a lot of times they can become an obsession, and they can actually increase the distance because they can take away a person's sense of value, control, and resources.
Which of partners do you think comes up with the compliance list the most often? Do you see men doing that very often?
I've seen it. Women most often, but I've seen cases where men have had. Actually, let me just step back and say it's probably 50-50, because as I'm thinking through it, men often come up with things that their wife will have to do in order to gain their trust. So it's like 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like 50-50. So compliance lists, again, increasing, they can become an obsession. The list itself can become the issue. And so we start off by saying, well, it's a trust issue, and so you have to do all these things. But then it becomes, the list itself, as I say, becomes the center of it. And I might add to the list as the person begins to check off things they've done. But you see, as they're completing all these things, they're not for themselves building a sense of value, control, and power, because they're having to kind of come up to my measure. So it's just doing the opposite. They feel less than valued. Mm-hmm. They feel less than having control. They feel less than having empowerment. The second thing that people have to work on is forgiveness. Now, the idea about the love triad, trust, forgiveness, and communion, is you can't have one without the other two. And so if we're working on trust, we have to work on all of these things simultaneously. So we have to work on forgiveness. If I want someone to prove their trustworthiness, it seems ironic, maybe, but I have to be forgiving. And so what do we mean by forgiving? And so forgiven, we say forgive and forget. So these English words are surprisingly meaningful. We use them just off the cuff, but they're actually both contractions, forgive and get, which is actually forgive and for receive. So when we're talking about forgiveness, forgive and forget, we use the word forget as though it has to do with amnesia, but actually the word has to do with receiving. So giving and receiving in a relationship, we have to work on giving and receiving. So what are we giving and receiving? Well, we're giving, fundamentally, we're giving and receiving ourselves. I'm giving myself to that person and receiving that person. If we don't do that, you're never going to build trust. If there isn't a giving and receiving in there as well. And then the third one is communion. And what I mean by communion, I mean communication, but deeper than communication. You can communicate and exchange data. And a lot of times, these lists, compliance lists that we put up for the other person, they are just more like data than they are communion. Mm. You know, you do these things, we check it off, and somehow that's supposed to help me trust you more. I can maybe trust you if you haven't been balancing the checkbook, and we say we're going to go on 6-month probation, you balancing the checkbook correctly, otherwise I'm going to take the checkbook back. So we go that 6 months. I may trust the person to balance the checkbook, kind of, but I still don't trust the person in any broad sense. I don't trust the person with me. And that's really the trust that we're talking about, we're trying to build. It's not trust you with this, trust you with that, but trust you with me. So the third one, communion, yeah, it is about communication, but it's deeper than communication. It's communion, the actual exchange of persons. And I've often said that in an atmosphere of communion, a husband and wife can have even small talk. Talk about the weather, say, please pass the sugar, say the most mundane things and feel an actual exchange. Mm-hmm. It's a choice you make to be vulnerable in that way. Mm-hmm. These three things, as a matter of fact, all add up to vulnerability, which we'll need to get into when we come back from the break.
Okay, building trust in marriage, how do you do it? That is the subject this week on the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. You already know you need some help with your marriage. Daniel does a lot of marriage counseling. And if you would like to get in touch with Daniel, how do they do that?
Well, you can call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also can email me through the website BibleBasedCounselor.com. Offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcasting in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the subject of how to build trust in marriage this week. And Daniel is getting into calls it the love triad. Is that also kind of the trust triad there? Or
you could call it the trust triad, the forgiveness triad, the communion or communication triad.
Right.
I do a whole series on communication too. I do. There's an article at ChristianCounselorsForum.com. If you go to ChristianCounselorsForum.com and over in the archives, I've probably got 30 or so articles in there that I've been writing since
1920.
A long time ago.
A lot of years. Think about this subject a lot.
You're 2000 is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Year 2000. But it's a two-part article down in the archives, probably toward the bottom, a two-part article on communication. And these three have to be pursued together. You can't it's all like building a brick brick wall. You don't just one brick on top of another up. They stagger.
Right.
And they're integrated.
And those again are trust, forgiveness, and communion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
and for a fuller explanation of what each of those entails, you could go to ChristianCounselorsForum.com and again in the archives, look for the article. I think it's about a quarter of the way down. Look for the article that says trust, forgiveness, and communion. And so this is a lengthy article about taking each one of those. Don't have time to do it on the radio here. But all those add up to vulnerability, of course, when I talk about just how you go about building trust, how you go about what is the meaning of forgiveness and communion. Those are choices that we make, and they add up to vulnerability. So I want to talk a little bit about vulnerability. We can choose to be vulnerable. Of course, when husband and wife attempt to be vulnerable, obviously that's a thing of stages and steps. You don't just come into a marriage completely vulnerable, more or less. But you learn to be vulnerable as you learn to trust, which as you learn to forgive and for receive, and as you learn communion. You could boil vulnerability down to basically three things. You know, that is empathy, shared reality, and shared boundaries. So if I just talk about these briefly, and I've done, I've talked at length of these about these two in some of the shows that we've done on personality, and also if you go to ChristianCounselorsForum.com in the archives, you'll find an article on personality. And it'll explain these in a little more depth. But empathy has to do with a physiological response to someone else's experience. So if you take it in the context of a marriage situation where trust has been broken, and so there's been someone who's violated the trust, and then the other person who's more or less the victim in it, even for the victim to be able to look at the person who's been at fault and empathize. Now, that's really a difficult thing to do. And even as people are listening to me, they're probably, if you're in that situation, you're probably wanting to resist that. Mm. And it sounds a little bit like punishing the victim. But it's absolutely essential that if I am going to, if in the case of forgiveness, if I'm going to forgive this other person, I have to know what I'm forgiving them for. So I need to understand a little bit about how they what brought them to that point where they violated my trust. That's not blaming the victim. It's not to say that if a man has been looking at pornography, it's been the wife's fault. But the wife can't afford to treat the husband as this kind of one-off freak that's gotten into this vile thing, and that she can't possibly understand it. She's got to try to understand, not to excuse it at all, but to try to understand and have compassion toward that person. Shoe on the other foot. The person that expects to be forgiven needs to know why he or she is being forgiven. There needs to be some understanding of what they've done. And that's a thing that doesn't happen immediately. If the husband says to the wife, say in this case, the husband's been wrong, maybe he's viewed pornography, or maybe he's spent money that he shouldn't, and he's confessing this fault, but part of the empathy on his part is understanding as much as he can as to just what kind of pain was actually caused. What was the totality of the violation? What all is represented here? And that's not the sort of thing that you typically understand when you first ask for forgiveness. It takes time, sometimes years, before a person finally gets to the place, if they ever do, of realizing the impact of what they did. And I'm not talking about denial. I'm just talking about realistically, the more I get to know my wife, the more I can appreciate the harm that I've done in just things that in the past that I've done that seemed to be not a big deal. But the more you get to know that other person and appreciate them, the deeper your remorse in even some of the small things that you did.
Well, speaking of, when you mentioned pornography, I think a lot of men are surprised by how harmful this is to women. Mm-hmm. Because more and more, particularly in our society, it is just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Yeah. It seems like all guys have some kind of relationship with pornography. Yeah. And when they get married, they think it's going to fix that. Mm-hmm. And it's everywhere. But then they're surprised how offensive this is.
Yeah. And I've often heard them say, It's not about my wife. Or had the wife would say, I know it's not about me, she'll say. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it is about women. And it's also about a man's disrespect, not only for women, but a man's disrespect for himself. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times people don't realize that the man who has, for example, a pornography addiction, and that's a big one specifically, and in particular, a pornography addiction is fear and shame based, and a lot of the approaches that people take to trying to fix that and build trust in that just generate more shame and more fear. Mm. So empathy. The other one is shared reality, and you can see a little bit of overlap here. There's actually a lot of overlap when I make these categories up. I'm actually just taking the continuum apart to make the categories, but so you can see the obvious overlap here. Shared reality. I'm not agreeing with the other person, but again, it's an empathetic behavior. I'm trying to understand how they would arrive at that kind of behavior. Illustration I often use is we see these people at this highway intersections and along the streets begging for food or money or something. And we have all kinds in our minds. We can have all kinds of responses to those people. And they're choices we make. We can respond. We can choose to respond in empathy, or we can choose to ignore them or despise them. Numerous different responses. To empathize, to even though I maybe disagree with the person, to have an understanding, and that's a form of vulnerability, to have an understanding, allow myself to have an understanding of how what led them to that behavior. The third one is shared boundaries. Now, shared boundaries, we typically think of boundaries as walls and, you know, don't come here. Don't call me. It's kind of like a no contact.
Right. Talk to the hand.
Yeah, talk to the hand. But boundaries are also, I like to think of them as conduits, because boundaries, I say, are rules that make the relationship work. So, of course, when I say make the relationship work, if you can imagine a machine sitting here in the middle of the floor and somebody says, is it working? And somebody else says, well, I don't know. What's it supposed to do? If it's not supposed to do anything, it's working. If it's supposed to do something else, it's not working. So when I say to make the relationship work, it implies the question, of course, well, what is the relationship supposed to do? So if we understand that the marriage relationship is for healing, for edification, for exhortation, for deeper walk with Christ, et cetera, so many similar things. Rules that make that work. What are the rules that make that work? Shared boundaries. Those are a little bit different for every marriage. But so when we're setting boundaries, setting rules that make the relationship work, of course, those have implications for behavior, of course. But again, the boundaries can be moved. They can be tweaked. You can get a boundary in the wrong place. It can be an incorrect boundary, and if it's an incorrect boundary, it's going to bring the opposite of these things we've talked
about.
What would you mean by an
incorrect boundary?
Well, a boundary,
unreasonable
again,
boundary.
An incorrect rule would be a rule that actually pushes the other person away. It would be a rule that actually doesn't work toward trust, forgiveness, and communion. So it might be a rule like, if you look at pornography again, I'm going to look at pornography myself. Or if you spend money again, I'm going to spend money myself.
Okay.
Something like that, which actually works against trust, against forgiveness. And it doesn't make the relationship work. It makes the relationship, takes a relationship in an opposite direction. So again, all these are, and we've just been able to hit the top of them. I guess I could underscore this this whole program by saying that this is the kind of thing that makes counseling valuable, because you can see that it's not just as simple as in order to rebuild trust. If you do certain things, something magical will happen in my mind and soul, and I will admire and respect you again.
It takes work.
It takes work, and if we're not careful, the kinds of hoops that we can set up to build trust, in fact, don't promote respect and honor. They promote just the opposite. So
it's kind of a parent-child relationship.
Yeah. And so to cover again, just to recap, you know, we're talking about building trust, which turns out to be you can't just build trust. You have to build forgiveness. You have to build a giving and receiving relationship. And the fact that there's a trust issue probably points to the fact that these things have not existed, give and receive and communion, things that we can be deliberate about, empathy, shared reality, shared boundaries. So building trust, if you get on the right path, it's something that's going to happen as a matter of course. But it's so easy to get on the wrong path. And so these are some things that we need to keep in mind. I've just been able to hit the tops. Again, you can find articles at ChristianCounselorsForum.com and podcasts at BibleBasedCounselor.com that go back over some of these things: love, forgiveness, communion, shared setting boundaries. Those are some of the podcasts and articles you'll find to enlarge on this. And also...
And also counseling, setting up an appointment. As Daniel mentioned, this kind of work, it works really well with a counselor, with a life coach. People need help. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, my telephone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through that BibleBasedCounselor.com website, and I have an office in Kirkland and an office in Edmonds.
Okay, always great stuff. Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.